1-1 pitch. Swing and a drive. Deep to right field. Way up there. Way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Strikeout for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome back to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill back with you once again. Thanks for coming around. No game last night, an off day, but Mariners getting ready for a big weekend at Safeco Field. Mariners and Twins for three. Happy Felix Day to one and all. Felix Hernandez will take the hill tonight. We're going to dive into all three matchups between the Mariners and Twins during this weekend. We'll get to that in just a second. No recap, obviously, with no game yesterday. So preview on its way. We're going to talk to Colin O'Keefe for the first time in the 2015 regular season. So he'll be around from lookoutlanding.com. Great stuff as always. One thing we're going to talk about as well, and I'd like to get your take on this. Mariners.com, you can vote on the franchise four. And I'm going to talk to Colin about this coming up as well, because I think it's a pretty interesting conversation. Every team is doing it. Fans are voting for the four best players, the franchise four in history. And when it comes to the Mariners in particular, I think it's really difficult to narrow down to four when you look who the candidates are. Jay Buhner, Alvin Davis, Ken Griffey Jr., Felix Hernandez, Randy Johnson, Edgar Martinez, Jamie Moyer, and Ichiro. Narrowing those down to the franchise four. Again, you can vote on Mariners.com, but I'd like to get your take on that. Tweet me at Gary Hill Jr. or GaryHillPXP@gmail.com. I think it's tough to do, and I'll talk to Colin about it in just a second, but I'd like your thoughts on that as well. We're going to hear from Seth Smith coming up. He led off for the Mariners in the most recent ball game. So Shannon Dreyer will sit down with Seth Smith. So let's dive into it. It is Felix Day. Felix Hernandez will take the mound tonight at Safeco Field, a place where, he has been absolutely dominant. I mean, he's dominant everywhere, but particularly at Safeco Field. This year, he's 2-0, a 2.37 ERA, three starts, two of them at Safeco Field, and he's got 14 innings at home. He's given up four hits and two runs. And you look at it, in his last 15 starts at Safeco Field, he's 10-2. This goes back to May 23rd of last year. 10-2, and among pitchers with at least 10 starts at home during that time frame, he has the very best home ERA in baseball at 1.56, and his whip is ridiculous, 0.77. I mean, he's great everywhere, but wow, those numbers are pretty amazing. And I remember the last time he faced the Minnesota Twins at Safeco Field, and he was absolutely dominant. A game the Mariners lost in extra innings, but he went 9 against the Twins, 5 hits, 1 run, no walks, and 11 punch-outs. That was 2 years ago. He faced Minnesota in Minnesota last year, so last time he faced them at Safeco Field, just completely dominant. So the Twins will have their hands full against the King at home. They're going to send Phil Hughes to the mound. Hughes had an excellent year in Minnesota, has stumbled a little bit to start the year, 0-3 with a 5.30 ERA. And Phil Hughes has not drawn the easy matchup so far this year. He has faced David Price from Detroit and Chris Sale from the White Sox. So might be part of the problem so far for Phil Hughes. And now he gets Felix Hernandez, so good luck with that. He's allowed 4 home runs this year. His control's been great, as it was last year. His control was historic last year. He's walked just 2 in 18 innings, but 4 home runs given up so far this season. Of course, last year he had a 7.20 ERA through 3 starts as well, and really got locked in and had a nice season for Minnesota. So that's the matchup in Game 1 of this series. Friday night, 7:10, Felix on the mound. I can't imagine a better place to be. Kings Court, Felix Day. It's going to be fun. Saturday, 6:10 first pitch from Safeco Field. James Paxton will take to the mound. He had a tough day on Wednesday, even without pitching. His ERA has now ballooned. He got tagged with 5 earned runs after a change in a scoring decision. So he's 0-1 with an 8.40 ERA. He'll try and get things turned around, and he's going to go against Trevor May, right-handed pitcher for Minnesota out of Longview, Washington. He's 1-1 with a 4.76 ERA so far this season. Although nice turn last time out against Cleveland, he went 6 innings and gave up just 1 run on 4 hits, no walks, and 4 strikeouts. So they'll face May on Saturday. And then on Sunday, 1:10 first pitch from Safeco Field, Hisashi Iwakuma will take to the mound, 0-1, a 6.61 ERA. And he's going to go against Kyle Gibson, 1-2 with a 5.87. So that's the pitching matchups for all three. Big weekend for the M's, and we'll talk about it right now with Colin O'Keefe. Well, now we get a chance to talk to one of our favorites. You know him well. It's Colin O'Keefe from LookoutLanding.com. You can see him on Twitter at Colin O'Keefe. And before we get into things, Colin, you have a Mariners podcast too. Tell us how we can get to it.
Yeah, it's 22s and Tridents. If you go on iTunes and just search for Tridents or 22s spelled out, yeah, just go on there and search Tridents. That'll be one of the first things that comes up on iTunes. I put it out on Twitter at Colin O'Keefe, so you can find it iTunes, my Twitter thread, or if you're on Android, it's on Stitcher as well. But yeah, once a weekly podcast with my brother Connor. It's a lot of fun, and yeah, appreciate being able to come on here and plug it just for a sec too.
Absolutely, no, it's great to have you back. This is our first in-season visit of 2015, so this is good. Now we're going to get into some in-season stuff here in a second, but. You know, Major League Baseball is doing something interesting right now. They're having a franchise four where fans can vote on the top four players for each franchise. And I think the Mariners conversation is pretty interesting. And fans can vote at Mariners.com if they want to go. And the choices are Jay Buhner, Alvin Davis, Griffey, Felix, Randy Johnson, Edgar, Moyer, and Ichiro. And I think narrowing it down to that four is pretty difficult. Colin, when you look at the franchise four, who are the Mariners franchise four?
It's really different. It's really difficult to do. I paint it. I mean, if I'm going to start with my number one pick, the guy who I think right now is, you know, my favorite Mariner, the guy who is the most Mariner player of all time, I think right now, before he even gets started, it's Felix. Just in the way that he's embraced the organization, the loyalty that he showed, personality that he has. So when I'm trying to decide who makes it into these four people, which is difficult, I think that's kind of my criteria, is like who most embodies the Mariners. It may not be the absolute best, so that's obviously easy. But and then from there, I think there's two other shoe-ins when you look at Griffey, and then you look at Edgar. I think those guys are absolutely, you know, looking at your – by any criteria, they're going to get in there. Edgar, the best ever at his position. And then Griffey, you know, just in what he was able to accomplish during his time here in Seattle was absolutely unbelievable. But then it's difficult choosing between Randy and Ichiro, and then maybe Buhner there as well. But getting that fourth guy between Randy and Ichiro, I think it's kind of difficult. If I had to choose, I think I'd kind of look back at what happened with this Hall of Fame voting. I think Randy himself even kind of thinks of himself a little bit more as a Diamondback, despite what he did here in Seattle, which was unbelievable. I still think I would lean Ichiro a little bit more just to get that representation from kind of the early 2000s, stretching into the mid-years, what he was able to do. Really, you know, kind of a cultural icon at the time, really the guy who almost most embodied, you know, in Japanese players coming over and playing in the States, winning an MVP and Rookie of the Year to start off. I think my four would have to be Felix, Griffey, Edgar, and Ichiro.
Well, let's get into what's going on right now. Mariners in the AL West. It's just a big mashup right now in the AL West. What are your impressions here early on in the season about things that are good signs for the Mariners right now looking ahead?
I think there's a lot that you can identify, which is one of the things that I kind of it's nice that we're talking here right after a win. It feels a little bit better than if we were talking after a loss, especially a sweep or something like that. But people need to realize that if this is the worst the Mariners are going to look, like this is almost a worst-case scenario from the pitching side. This is Iwakuma scuffling the start, Paxton stuff scuffling the start, you know, Walker scuffling the start. This is almost your worst-case scenario. And through all of that, they're only a couple games back in the division. They're able to put up runs on the board. And then it's nice to see, you know, of course we have Nelson Cruz. That's unbelievable to see him jump out of the gates, because a lot of lower level stories that I think are almost more encouraging. Brad Miller coming out of the gate, batting really consistently, playing consistent defense. If he's the shortstop that the Mariners thought that they had going into last year, if they can get him for the full year this year, that is a huge deal going forward. And then also one of the things that people talk about with Kyle Seager, and I think we've probably talked about on the show before, is there's always this perception that Kyle Seager can't possibly get any better. He can't. Even after 2013, people were thinking that's got to be his ceiling. Then he's an all-star and he wins the Gold Glove, and people are thinking, all right, that's got to be his ceiling. He's going to come back to the pack a little bit. Well, early on here in 2015, he's already cut down on his strikeouts in a meaningful way. So it'll be interesting to see if that trend holds, but you're starting to see lots of interesting stuff. And again, if I don't know what we're going to get exactly out of the pitching. It's a little bit disconcerting, but if this is what the team looks like when the pitching is kind of off the rails, really kind of struggling, the bullpen struggling to get it together, and they're really only a couple games below 500 and they're putting runs on the board, it's not so bad. So there's a lot to focus on as far as the positives, and there's a lot of positives even below the top level stuff. So I look at Seager, I look at what Miller's doing. Nino, he's even had a couple of recent bombs. If he can get the offense going, there's a lot of positive signs. There are reasons for concern, definitely, but I mean, at the same time, there's some positives even below the top level stuff.
Yeah, what are a couple of the reasons of concern when you look ahead from what you've seen so far?
The thing, if I were to pick one thing that stresses me out the most, I think it would probably be Iwakuma's start, just because of what we saw at the end of last year. Also, I think somebody pointed out that Japanese pitchers, sometimes in their third full season coming over to the majors, which is a longer schedule, they're pitching more frequently, they can sometimes have some trouble. But Iwakuma was one of those guys that the Mariners could have taken a big step forward if he could come back and be a true number two type starter. If they could have gotten that, you know, definitely the same guy we had in 2013 with, you know, people were kind of saying, if he has a full spring training, gets back in the routine, you know, maybe we're going to see that guy that we saw in 2013. Well, early on, he's leaving a lot of pitches up in the zone, which is a little bit concerning for me. It's going to be interesting. You don't see any major red flags, even, you know, when you get into the metrics of if he's leaving the ball up in the zone or you're worried about velocity or stuff like that. You're not seeing any of the major red flag type warning signs or anything like that, but still, if the Mariners, you know, they were going to be some kind of world beater juggernaut or they win 95-100 games, it would have been nice to have Iwakuma come out and be kind of what he's been at his peak. And early on, he hasn't quite been that. He still thinks, I heard him say the other day, he thinks his stuff's still pretty solid. He's just letting pitches get up in the zone a little bit. But it'd just be really nice, and you know, coming up this week, next week, to see him have a quality start. One of those types of things where it's, you know, not just having his stuff back, but also going deep in a game. Because I think one of the things that we're starting to see that people are worried about also, of course, is the bullpen. But what's going on there, at least a little bit, is starters just aren't going deep enough in game. So Lloyd isn't able to play the matchups quite like you would like. I think we had a situation last night or the night before where they're trying to limit how much they can use Carson Smith because Carson Smith had pitched three nights in a row. So you're seeing Farquhar come in there when he's fatigued and he's given up hard contact. And it's just I think they need the starters to go deep in games, and in particular, they need Iwakuma to kind of get closer to the guy that we saw a couple of years ago.
You know, along those lines, I find it interesting, too. For a lot of the year last year, they carried that extra arm in the bullpen when Maurer came up, and that's when the bullpen, I thought, really took off. It seemed like, you know, he could roll just three, four fresh arms out every single night. And I'm wondering, at some point, if they'll go back to an extra arm of the bullpen, although with a deeper bench, it would put a crunch there. It's going to be interesting to see how they manipulate the roster moving forward.
And that might happen really soon. I mean, we're going to see that. They got Tom Wilhelmsen only on the 15-day disabled list, and there are people talking like he could be back relatively soon. He's starting to throw again. So we might see him before too long. And it's going to be really interesting to see if they ultimately decide if they send Dominic Leone back down to Tacoma. Or, you know, I don't think there are any people beyond Leone and Smith who even have options in the bullpen. Of course, you know, they could send back a Tyler Olson type, but I don't think Lloyd wants to go without his two lefties. And it's just, it's kind of a difficult situation that they have, because it could happen with the platoons that they have. It's really difficult to run a shorter bench, but I don't, you know, I haven't taken a look at the extended schedule, but I don't think they have any National League games immediately coming up, at least not on the road where they're going to have to play without the designated hitter. But it's going to be interesting. I'm very interested to see this way this goes once Will Hampson is ready to come back, and if they decide to, you know, send Leon back down, because he's been throwing the ball quite well. Then also at the same time, you know, that's when you start to think about, you know, if you do not send one of those relievers back down, you're looking at does Ruggiano or Weeks have a spot, because they're having a hard time getting those guys at bats at this point. They haven't faced a ton of lefties, and that's part of the reason, but they haven't been getting a lot of bats, and then coming from the other side, they just signed Carlos Quinton. So you're going to see a little bit of a roster crunch pretty soon, and I think it's going to kind of tip their hand on if they're really committed to going with the seven-man bullpen that they had before or with shifting things up a little bit. But, you know, we've seen over the past, or last year in particular, they're willing to play some games with how they structure the roster for short periods of time, whether it's sending a guy down for a short period and getting it back up and doing different types of stuff like that. So it's going to be interesting to see, but they have so many veterans on this club that they can't quite play the swing game between Tacoma and Seattle as much as they did before. But I'm really interested to see what happens once Will Hampson's ready to come back.
Yeah, me too. You mentioned veterans on this club. How about the veteran Nelson Cruz and his start? I mean, what can you say about what he has done so far this season?
The Mariners signed the Mariners signed Robinson Cano last year, and that was really a different type of feeling where they're able to bring on an elite level superstar, and that was really unprecedented as far as, you know, what the Mariners have done in the past. But still, for as good as Robinson Cano is, when Nelson Cruz is on and he is on fire, he might be an even better hitter. Robinson Cano is, of course, a more balanced hitter. But you can see Nelson Cruz, when he is on fire, has the ability to just take over a game. And we saw that on Sunday where, you know, he hits two home runs, and then they're coming up in the ninth. And I'm thinking, you know, after Weeks pops out, they walk Cano, I'm thinking, you know, please, you know, don't let Cruz strike out or pop up and then go to extras. And after this comeback, they lose it in extras. You know, Cruz is just, he was locked in, got a pitch to hit, and he just rifled the ball. You know, we saw the Statcast numbers. It was, I think, 119 miles an hour into left field, the hardest ball hit all year. It's impressive. And, I mean, people were worried about him taking a big step back, more in line with his career numbers, where you'd see him, you know, maybe be a 20 to 25 home run guy. We talked about WRC plus being about a little bit above average hitter, maybe like what Kendrys Morales was in 2013, maybe a tick above that was kind of what people were worried about. He was going to really come back to his career numbers. And the possibility still exists that he could do that. But after what he's done here early on, I don't think it's unfair to get excited about the potential of him hitting more than 30 home runs, or him, who knows, hypothetically chasing down that 40 home run total that he ran down last year. And also, you know, out in the field, he's not an athletic guy. You know, he's not going to range over and catch balls that are, you know, deep in the alleys. But also at the same time, his routes aren't terrible. We saw him make a catch Wednesday night. That was a big one that was a huge catch. And, you know, he also has a decent arm as well. There'll be some slip ups, but, you know, at the same time, they got him for his bat, and that bat has been unbelievable. It's just, this probably isn't the last time that we're going to see Nelson Cruz just be absolutely on fire either. There'll be times where, you know, it happens again. And when it does, he has the ability to just take over a game completely. I mean, we talk about wins above replacement and those metrics and stuff like that. And those are the types of things that just don't quite capture Nelson Cruz when he's on fire, because he can just go out there and win a game on his own.
No, agreed. And lastly, this feels like a big opportunity this weekend for the Mariners with the division still in a jumble. Mariners have the Twins, and the rotation sets up perfectly with Felix starting out the series on Friday.
It absolutely does. They got their three best pitchers going, and that Friday night matchup with Phil Hughes is going to be really good. And this is an opportunity for both Paxton and Iwakuma to take a step forward. I think we saw it with Walker against the Astros, where, you know, I think Walker took a step forward in some part. You know, I don't think his command was all the way there, like to where we saw it in the spring, but his stuff is so good that he was able to blow it by people. And I say that because, just to remind people, you're not always going to play the Athletics, and you're not always going to play the Dodgers. And when you leave stuff up in the zone, it's not always going to get destroyed. So if Iwakuma and Paxton can take even a bit of a step forward to get back to the top of their game, you know, they have a chance to roll through a lineup that is not great in the Twins. You know, you don't want to try to hope for a sweep because that's hard against any team. But, you know, at the same time, it lines up very, very well, particularly if they can get that Friday night game against Phil Hughes. He's a tough matchup, but with the way the pitching sets up, if they can get a nice series here, get at least two out, have to get two out of three. But if they can get a sweep, they will have gone 6-3 on the homestand, and I think that's what everyone was hoping for. It's difficult to expect a sweep over any team, but I think the Twins have one of the worst run differentials in the American League, so it's going to be interesting to see exactly what happens. Hopefully we have some good crowds out. I know they got some good promotions and that type of stuff going on, so hopefully there's some good crowds, but at the same time, the pitching lines up extremely favorably. So if they can get the pitching going just right, I think they have an opportunity to do some stuff in this series, and hopefully you see the bats come around as well. I mean, it's going to be tough against Hughes, but, you know, they had the heart of the order had an amazing, amazing week over the last 7 days. They had a couple guys who were batting over 400, and just a bunch of guys that put up some really good numbers. So hopefully that carries over into the weekend and into next week as well. So we'll see how it goes. But, you know, with your top three pitchers going against a not great team, you know, this is the type of series that you're hoping for early in the season when you try to get your stuff together. So it's hopefully they can get some wind in their sails here.
Yeah, no doubt about that. No, you lined it up perfectly. Well, Colin, great stuff as always. I appreciate the visit, and we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Colin O'Keefe, lookoutlanding.com, at Colin O'Keefe. Great follow on Twitter. I recommend it highly. Also, check out his podcast. You can find it on iTunes.
So now we're going to hand things off to Shannon Dreyer, a discussion with Seth Smith, who's top of the order, a place where he's been in the past, and for good reason. I think it's interesting to look at if we're going to see him more at the top of the order because, you know, we've seen the middle of the order and the possibilities there between Cano and Cruz and Seager and the damage that they can inflict. The one and two spots will be critical. Those guys get on base consistently. The middle of the order can do a ton of damage. So Seth Smith, going into the game 2 days ago, a 351 on base percentage since 2013. It's pretty good. I mean, it's in top 50 for guys with, you know, 800 at bats. So that's pretty good in that time frame. In comparison, the Mariners from their leadoff spot in that time frame, a 292 on base percentage, and that's the worst in Major League Baseball since 2013. So they haven't been getting on base at the top spot since 2013 collectively. And if they find a way to do it, I mean, it's only going to help the offense, obviously. I mean, it's kind of an obvious point. If you get on base a lot for the middle of the order, you have a chance to score a lot of runs. So we'll see if we see him at the top of the order a little more often. I don't know. We'll see how it plays out. But here's Shannon Dreyer with Seth Smith.
Catching up with Seth Smith, and Seth, you've already answered a ton of questions about this. We saw you at the top of the lineup today. A little different for us, not too out of the ordinary for you.
Yeah, I've done it before, and ultimately it's just another place in the lineup that someone has to hit, and it happens to be me today, and it won't change anything about my approach.
Is this something, does Lloyd come up to you the day before, or you see that for the first time on the lineup?
I just saw it today. Just thankful to be in the lineup, and wherever it is, you know, it's like I said, it's no different. Someone has to hit 1 through 9, and I'm hitting 1 today, but it's just another at bat.
The at bats are something that everybody's been talking about. We're seeing, you know, good at bats. We're seeing long at bats. We're seeing you really kind of have at bats that other players are talking about that they're watching as well. When you step up to the plate, where does this approach come from?
I'm just trying to get a good pitch to hit, and you know, if it's early in the count, I'm going to offer at it. And if it happens to be late and I see more pitches, then that's the way it's going to be. But really, I'm not trying to get deep in counts. I'm not trying to see pitches. I'm trying to get a good pitch to hit, a good pitch to drive. And where that happens in the count is going to dictate how, you know, how long or how many pitches I see.
How does the at-bat change for you when you get to two strikes?
Well, you're going to shorten up a little bit and, you know, understand and try to trying to know beforehand what his out pitches may be and what he's going to try to do, and then hope you can barrel it up. If you can't barrel it up, hopefully you can take it if he's throwing it for a ball. And if he throws a good pitch that you're not able to barrel up, hopefully you can muscle it somewhere and get it through the infield or have it fall in for you.
When you were talking earlier with the group, you mentioned that what you're doing, what we're seeing from you at the plate, is an accumulation of everything that you've done. And you said that, you know, it's the work that you put in. You also mentioned guys' approaches that you've studied. Who's been influential, or who was influential to you in that regard?
No one in particular. It's just a kind of a culmination of a lot of at-bats that I've seen, and just watching people hit throughout baseball and what I've seen guys have success with. And ultimately, it comes down to having been around for a little while now, just knowing what works best for me. And really, it's kind of going back to the basics. Is, you know, you want to hit a good pitch. You don't want to hit their pitch. You want to hit your pitch. And if that if that takes kind of waiting around, then so be it.
When did you kind of get comfortable with that and say, okay, this is my approach?
It's been a couple years now, I guess. Just, you know, early, you try to make things happen instead of letting the game kind of come to you and kind of relaxing and taking, you know, what they give you, as opposed to trying to force things to happen. Like sometimes when you want to hit so bad that you're going to offer it at a pitch that you might not, just because, you know, initially out of the hand it may look good to hit and you may give your best swing, but it might not work out. So I found that, you know, if I'm aggressive, but aggressive in a smart, controlled way, it's worked out best for me.
And, you know, that's what we see from you at the plate. You have a calmness at the plate, but you're still geared for that fastball. How do you strike that balance?
It's tough, but that's part of baseball. Baseball's hard, and everybody has their own approach and their own way about going, their own way of going about things. And I wouldn't be able to list, you know, like my hitting philosophy when I'm in the box, other than I'm trying to get a good pitch to hit. And, you know, however it may look to you guys or other people, I can't control, and I don't really worry about it. And I'm up there trying to, like I said, get a good pitch to hit and try to hit it well.
Lastly, you're new to Seattle. What have you enjoyed so far? I know it's just been a short time that you've been here, but how is Seattle working?
It's good. The weather's been great. And everybody says it's not normal weather for this time of the year, but it's been pleasant, and we've enjoyed being here, and I've got nothing but great things to say about Seattle.
We've enjoyed seeing you out there as well. Seth, thank you.
Thank you.
As California goes, his hits a sweet surprise. Is never cold. He's got Elvin Davis eyes. You hit a fastball on you, a roller like it had eyes. You leave you feeling blue. He's got Elvin Davis eyes. It might ease you when it tease you, and it only tenacious, and he knows just what it takes to run the bases. All the Ian's say, he's the guy, he's got Elvin Davis eyes. They'll work him high and low, lower back inside. Reflects slow. He's got Elvin Davis eyes. Think there's a hole you found. Don't try the same pitch twice. He'll jerk a ball downtown.